This meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 2:07 p.m. Wednesday, February 26, 2020. Before we begin, I want to thank Jordan May, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Madison Truitt from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Drummond, Representative Stutz, my Vice Chair, Representative Kopp, and myself, Representative Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is House Bill 124, Electronic Documents and Notarization, sponsored by my office. This is the third hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. At this time, we will take up amendments to House Bill 24. I will note that, for the record, that Legislative Legal has permission to make any technical and conforming changes to the bill. We received three amendments to House Bill 124. Those were all submitted by Representative Eastman. Representative Eastman is not here. I will ask one more. Is there anyone that wishes to offer any amendments? Hearing and seeing no one, there are no amendments. That brings House Bill 124 before the committee. And I'm giving members 3 minutes, if they'd like, to make final comments on the bill. Does anyone wish to make comments on House Bill 124? Hearing and seeing no one. Representative Kopp, may I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move version 31-LS0627/S of House Bill 124 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
House Bill 1, hearing no objection. House Bill 120. I recognize that Representative Eastman has joined us. Mr. Representative Eastman, do you wish to speak to your objection?
To House Bill 124.
124.
Yeah. I think my office had prepared some amendments that I was hoping would be considered by the committee.
Representative Eastman, we noticed the committee for 2 o'clock. You were not here. The time for taking up amendments has come and gone.
I'll maintain my objection.
Okay. Cool. Is there any other one? Anyone else want to speak to the bill itself? You can see no one. If you could please call the roll.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Representative Kopp.
Yes.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Stutz?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux is not present. Representative Shaw is not present. Chair Klayman?
Yes.
All right, 4 yeas, 1 nay.
So by a vote of 4-1, House Bill 124 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Second and final order of business today is House Bill 146, Motor Vehicle Dealers Applications Insurance, sponsored by my office. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. As I am the sponsor of the bill, I'm going to pass the gavel over to my vice chair, Representative Kopp, for the duration of the bill presentation. I would note, because we have some folks that have traveled from out of town to testify on public hearing, our plan is that we'll make the bill presentation and we'll hold off on questions about the bill until after public testimony.
Brief at ease. Committee is back on record. 2:12 p.m. is the time. We have before us today proposed a committee substitute. Here to introduce the committee substitute is the bill sponsor, Representative Klayman, and his staff, David Clark. So, Mr. Representative and Mr. Clark, if you just identify yourself for the record and explain the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Matt Klayman, State House Representative for House District 21. I want to thank you all for hearing House Bill 146 today. The purpose of House Bill 146 is to improve consumer protections for those purchasing motor vehicles by strengthening requirements for motor vehicle dealers. Under current law, biennial registration is required with an application to the Department of Motor Vehicles, a $50 registration fee, and a $50,000 surety bond. Applicants are not required to furnish a certificate of liability insurance, and there is no requirement to list a telephone number on the initial application. These are lenient requirements compared to other states. For example, Oregon statutes on motor vehicle dealership provides for the process of applying for an automobile dealer license, grounds for suspension and revocation of the license, as well as full definition of illegal practices and associated penalties. Delaware statutes require applicants to provide a proof of location of the business and identify grounds for license revocation. Texas statutes provide for an automobiler licensure and maintenance processes, as well as detailed procedures for complaints, judicial review, and penalties. Unlike these other states, there are no Alaska statutes providing for a grievance process, grounds for revocation, or proof of location. These leading requirements can make it easier for rogue applicants to become motor vehicle dealers and put consumer safety and protection at risk. Two scenarios illustrate the need for these changes. First, when a dealer obtains a license, they are qualified to purchase cars at dealer-only auctions at steep discounts. Curbstoning occurs when the dealer is not required to disclose the fact that he or she is a licensed car dealer or that the vehicle has a reconstructed title or has known defects. If deemed a personal vehicle, the vehicle is not subject to a routine safety inspection required by Alaska statutes. Often the title is not placed in the dealer's name, the contact information provided is not the dealer's information, or the transaction takes place in cash, leaving little trail for the consumer to follow if issues arise. House Bill 146 also seeks to provide better protection when one so-called selling dealer sells multiple vehicles to another buying dealer and receives payment from the buying dealer but does not provide title. And this occurs when the titles are actually being held by the bank that has provided a line of credit for purchasing the vehicles. The selling dealer plans to pay for the vehicles and get the titles, but runs into financial problems with the bank and is unable to continue making payments. The bank then repossesses the vehicles from the buying dealer. The buying dealer now has lost the money and decides to seek recompense from the selling dealer's bond. At present, the bond requirement under state law is $50,000, which has been in place for decades, and depending on the type and quantity of vehicles, may be only a fraction of what is lost and what is owed. So by raising the bond requirement, it strengthens protections in the event of problems that could arise. The purpose of House 146 is to establish a more rigorous application process in the interest of transparency and reducing the potential for harm through increased bond amounts, mandatory insurance, and additional disclosures that will hold automobilers more accountable as business owners than under current statutes. With that, I will turn it over to my staff, David Clark, who will explain the bill in greater detail.
To the Chair and Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is David Clark, and I am staff to Representative Matt Klayman. House Bill 146 strengthens automobile consumer protection by requiring potential automobile dealers to follow a strengthened application process. Section 1 of this legislation amends AS0866030 by requiring the applicant to provide a working telephone number for the business listed on the application, a written statement affirming that no person holding a 5% or greater interest in the business has been convicted of a felony involving fraud, embezzlement, or misappropriation of property within 5 years preceding the date of the initial application, a statement acknowledging that the applicant has reviewed the requirements for workers' compensation insurance and will maintain workers' compensation insurance if it is applicable, and a copy of the liability policy certificate of insurance, further detailed in Section 3. Section 2 of this legislation raises the current bond amount required of auto dealer applicants, as outlined in AS0866060, subparagraph A, from $50,000 to $100,000. Section 3 of this bill adds a new section to AS0866 that requires that dealers maintain liability insurance of not less than $50,000 for property damage, $100,000 for injury to a single person, and $200,000 for injury to more than one person. Thank you for considering House Bill 146 today. With that, we're happy to answer any questions that the committee may have. Of course, after public testimony.
I will, honor the process request and proceed now to public testimony. And for public testimony, I'll turn the gavel back over to Chair Klayman.
Thank you very much, Representative Kopp. Excellent work as Vice Chair. Before we go to actually the testimony, there is a proposed subcommittee substitute to House Bill 146 before us. Can I have a motion to adopt the committee substitute as our working document?
Mr. Chairman, I move that House Judiciary Committee adopt the committee substitute to House Bill 146, version 31-LS0818/S as our working document.
Hearing no objection, the committee substitute is adopted for House Bill 146. And I will now open public testimony on House Bill 146. And we can start, either one of you, actually. You can choose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve Allwine. I am a member of the National Auto Dealers Association, and I am, as that, a representative of that association on the Alaska Auto Dealers Association board. I am also an automotive retailer here in Juneau. My wife and I have five different franchises in our community, and we serve a lot of the folks in Southeast Alaska. I am here to speak in favor of this legislation. We have recurring issues that are basically, in my experience, consumer-related, whereby, the bill sponsor referenced this, but essentially, in our industry, we've got a situation where it's easy in the state of Alaska to acquire a dealer's license. And what we're hoping that this bill will do is sort of stiffen that up a little bit. I will be candid. This will not answer all the questions or all the concerns that we have. But one of the things that is beneficial in this bill is it takes that dealer license and it makes it a little more difficult to get. By doing that, it sort of narrows that bandwidth for those people securing a dealer's license to have access to these closed dealer auctions. Now, those auctions involve banks, they involve insurance companies, and they involve other automobile dealers. If I have inventory on the ground that maybe I've had for 90 or 120 days, and for whatever reason, there's nothing wrong with the car in my case, whatever reason, I haven't been able to sell the car, I would run the car to the auction, turn it back into cash, and go find something I could make some money on. The other side of that is if I take a vehicle in on trade, and it may be fine, but it's like, no, it needs a new transmission or it needs a new engine, and I don't want to put the time into it. It may go to the auction. So all those vehicles, including vehicles that are totaled and rebuilt or vehicles that are totaled and not reconstructed, tend to go through these dealer-only auctions, okay? The problem is, because it's so easy to get a dealer's license, people go in, they access those vehicles, the product at the auction, and they turn around because of the advent of the internet and Craigslist, and they hold themselves out as an individual instead of a dealer. They sell that product to somebody with a known defect, and in this day of airbags and the recalls that we deal with, there are some serious problems. The implications for the consumer are significant. So that ultimately, from our perspective, is one of the things that we are trying to stop, and that's the reason that I'm speaking in support of this legislation.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I don't see any questions. Next we have Marcus Whaler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Marcus Whaler, Anchorage, Alaska, Red, White, and Blue Auto Sales. The reason I'm here today in support of this legislation is I've been in the automotive business for 23 years now, and in the past 4 to 5 years, I've really noticed an uptick in the number of dealers that are attending the auctions that do not have stores where they actually sell these vehicles from. Traditionally, in other markets, they're called wholesalers. But what has been happening, and if you can go on Craigslist and see this during any day, gentlemen will buy these vehicles at the auction, and as a dealer, and they will get on Craigslist, and oftentimes these photos are actually taken at the auction, and you'll see these outrageous stories. You know, a carpenter out of work, maintenance has always been done. Private party seller, and they'll put these on Craigslist and sell them to the public. And there's been zero reconditioning done. There's no disclosure of known defects. And the way our current dealer licensing works, these guys are able for a simple $550 a bond and a $50 registration fee to receive their dealer's license and begin operating in this bad manner. So it's probably best summed up by a story that, and this is a gal who came in about 2 weeks ago to purchase a vehicle from us, and her trade-in was a 2008 Subaru Tribeca. She was 81 years old, and when a vehicle runs through the auction, I have a program that has the guidebook and also the history reports that it pulls up, and it saves it in my phone. So when she came in to trade this in, I noticed that that vehicle had already been saved in my phone. It had been run through the auction about 2 months prior. And this gal had bought that Subaru Tribeca. She traded it in with me, and I took it over to the mechanic shop for an inspection prior to resale. Well, the check engine light bulb had been removed. The airbag sensors had been cut, so there was no airbag light on. There was, you know, no safety system, so they had been disabled on the car. And, you know, she unwittingly had purchased this vehicle from a private party. But, in fact, it had been a dealer who had bought this from Craigslist and had, you know, a predatory dealer who had sold this to an 81-year-old woman. And now she had a car that was worth half of what she had paid for it, you know, a matter of a month or two later. And this is just happening again and again and again in our marketplace. So the idea being that, you know, if we were to strengthen our dealer licensing requirements, that it would protect the citizenry of Alaska from these predatory dealers.
Any questions for Mr. Whaler? I don't see any. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to provide testimony, public testimony on House Bill 146? I don't have anyone else online. I would note that Joanne Olson, the interim director of DMV, is available for questions but not offering testimony.
Just committee question it was.
Oh, do you have a question?
For either one of these gentlemen.
Oh, go ahead.
So thank you for your testimony. So it sounds like there is a issue of not just consumer protection, which is significant, but also market competitiveness. If I hear what you're saying correctly, you can have one entity with a motor vehicle dealer license that's providing workman's comp insurance on all their employees, maintaining a significant liability policy insurance on all their vehicles so that if an accident happens on a test drive, they're covered, and is maintaining some type of bond. Obviously, you're raising that bond because it's $50,000, could be one car today, I guess. Do you feel like those three things I just mentioned make it harder for an overnight shop to be set up by just having those minimal hurdles met, and that beyond the obvious consumer protections that they make for a more even playing field in the industry itself as far as just a fair competitiveness?
I can speak to that. Mr. Chairman,
And you should just identify yourself again.
Okay.
This is the habit we have.
Marcus Whaler, Red, White, and Blue Auto Sales. So two things. One is, as a private party, if you go to a dealership today, you're required to have proof of insurance simply to have the registration and title switched over to your name. So that's just a requirement that we require of any citizen buying a vehicle from a dealer. And then the other part, as far as the bond, currently, a $50,000 bond cost, we got a quote from, Steve actually got a quote today for $364 for a $50,000 bond. For a $250,000 bond, that's $1,770. That's hardly an impediment to becoming a dealer and being able to be active in the used car sales market.
Did you get a quote for a $100,000 bond? Because the bill is for a $100,000 bond, not for a $250,000 bond.
Yes. $364 times two, so a little over $700.
Okay.
So that wouldn't be an impediment to becoming a dealer at all. And what it does do, though, is protect people. We, our attorney, Gary, he represented a few dealers this past year, a year and a half, that have gone out of business. And a couple of the things that have happened with these dealers is They have flooring lines with banks and that loan them money to purchase their vehicles. And in exchange, they give title to that vehicle after they've paid for it. So these dealers would sell these vehicles to the public, and not long afterwards, they declare bankruptcy or went under, and the consumer never received title to the vehicle, and technically the bank still owned that vehicle. So what you had was consumers going after the bonds of these dealers, and today, at today's car market prices, $50,000, you know, might cover two vehicles. I mean, and you were talking dozens between these three dealers that went out of business in the past year and a half. So that, you know, whether it's $100,000 or $250,000, like, that gets gobbled up so quickly over just somebody who's doing bad business in the last month before they go under. So that's the idea with the
follow-up. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So in a scenario where you have someone that trades a vehicle in and the understanding is the dealer will pay off the balance of the loan on their car, say you owe $1,500 left on your car and take whatever collateral you have left and apply it towards the car you drive away with, does the bond, is that what enables a private party to, if the dealer fails to pay off the vehicle, what is the action left to a citizen if they find out that they still have a note on a vehicle they thought they traded it in and were taken care of? I mean, is that, does the bond take care of that insurance, or what protects the consumer in that?
So the way I understand it, in lieu of other assets that they couldn't go after, they would hire an attorney. That bond would be last recourse for them to get their money back on the vehicle that they had purchased. But normally this happens in the scenario where the dealer has bought the vehicle from the auction.
Mm-hmm.
The auction's been paid with proceeds from the bank that were loaned in exchange for the title. That dealer then sells that vehicle to somebody in the public, and then that person never receives title for that vehicle and thereby never receives a transfer of ownership, mm-hmm. and is out the money that they paid for that vehicle.
One more follow-up.
And
Mr. Chairman, this may be for you. Do we know how long the $50,000 bond has been on the books?
That may be a better question. I know it's been there a long time.
Yeah.
Through the chair, for the record, Steve Allwine, Alaska Auto Dealers Association. Representative Kopp, I think since when I was born, which is about 1953, I mean, and I mean that in the literal sense, it has been out there for decades and decades, so it has not changed a lot. And, of course, the value of the cars has changed significantly.
Yeah. So I guess...
Go ahead, Representative.
You know, it may be that... you know, that even $100,000 is too low. I guess what I'm saying, I don't know how big of a group has landed on this number, but it may be that something twice that would be justifiable, or if that would create outrage within the industry, I don't know. That's why I just offered as a comment more than a suggestion, recommendation.
Through the chair, I would look to the bill sponsor for guidance on that.
Mm-hmm. So in answer to that question, that if you go back and look at the original version of the bill, it actually was at $250,000 bond amount, and then some questions came up about how does it look compared to other states, and it turns out 100,000 is the highest amount of any other state right now.
Okay.
And so I think economically the case for 250,000 is very sound, but the notion that we're putting a bond amount that's 2.5 times the and there are several states with the $100,000 bond, but that was the primary reason why we changed it to 100,000.
Yeah. Okay.
And I can get my understanding too in terms of the bill. In your question about the bond, I think is providing more financial security in the event that somebody doesn't pay what they're owed. But the other key feature for consumer protection is adding the liability insurance requirement, so that I think the situation where the car didn't have the airbag and was unknown, may have been known to the dealer but not known to the buyer, that liability insurance would provide insurance for the non-disclosure about the airbag. And for the same token, if you had somebody came to the used car lot or the new car lot for that matter and and got a car, and that it was their first car. They had no insurance as they were test driving. That insurance would cover the test drives of the people coming to the dealership, and right now there's no such requirement. Other questions for either of the folks who have testified?
Just one more.
Representative Kopp.
Are there any provisions in this bill that, as far as you know, through the, I guess, Mr. Allwine, through the Automobile Dealers Association, any provisions that aren't supported by the association?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, the association voted on this and supported this bill. We actually have talked about this since 2011. Interestingly enough, I'm a new vehicle retailer. My counterpart is a used vehicle retailer. And this was brought to our attention and supported in 2011 by a used vehicle retailer who you actually, I believe, have a letter of support from, Carol Leiberger. Mm-hmm. All the way back to 2011, the used vehicle retailers recognized that this was becoming an issue. Right. And we've finally gotten to the point, thanks to the chairman giving us the guidance and the assistance to arrive at this point. And we do hope that you will support this. I will say one thing with respect to the chair. This is not a self-serving bill. This is not something where we want to deprive anybody of what we do for a living. 99% of the automobile retailers in this state are family businesses. Even the publicly held company was a family business, and most people don't know that.
Maybe GM.
I think so. Okay. I don't see any other questions. Did I close public testimony already?
No, you haven't.
All right. Hearing and seeing no one else that wants to testify, no one else on the list, I'm going to close public testimony. This is an opportunity if members of the committee have questions, either for me as the bill sponsor. They may be able to answer the questions better than I can, but if you have questions about the bill, now is your opportunity. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the attention of the sponsor of the bill to what is done in other states. I'm looking at the list. You're showing us just eight states, including Alaska, for their requirements. Does this mean that the other 42 states do not have requirements on this kind of dealer?
Representative Drummond, no, actually doesn't mean the other states don't have those. That's just what we prepared. If you'd like us to get before the next hearing an identification of what's the story in all 50 states, we can certainly get that.
I would be curious also, a follow-up on that.
Representative Drummond, go ahead.
Only Hawaii in this list goes as high as $100,000 for a surety bond, and that's only if the dealer is handling more than 60 units or more per month. And it jumps from $25,000 surety bond at 60 units, at under 60 units a month. Is that the one state that you noted that had the $100,000 requirement, or are there others?
I distinctly remember others from our research, and we just didn't present that, but we'll get that.
Yeah, I would be interested to know the others that you're comparing us to.
I think we can actually get you a listing of all 50 states.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Other questions on House Bill 146? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. My question is going to be, what impact, if this bill passes, is it going to have on barriers to entry for someone newly trying to enter the profession?
I would say that the only, there would be two potential barriers to entry. One, if they have felony convictions of the narrow classes of felony that are listed, and they have more than a 5% interest in the business that they are starting, then those individuals have that barrier to entry. But it's a much, much narrower class of felonies than just than all felonies, and that actually, that particular provision is taken from the code or the statute relating to hearing aid dealers. And it's narrower than the hearing aid dealers provision. And so that's a barrier to entry, and I would describe that as a fairly small barrier to entry. The others are purely economic. There's a requirement that they have insurance, and insurance costs a certain amount of money to have that insurance policy in place, and there's a bond requirement that's required they have the bond in place. But other than those two things, there's no other barriers to entry. And in terms of today, and there's a $50 application fee, but the application fee doesn't change. So I would say the only change from existing law is the narrow felony provision. We've doubled the bond amount, which I think the testimony was about $360 on top of what they would have to pay today, plus purchasing insurance.
Follow-up question then.
Representative Eastman.
So I see on page one we have this requirement for a telephone number. So if I want to become a dealer, can I use my personal telephone number or my personal cell phone number to meet that requirement? Because it says of the business. Am I going to get dinged if somebody says, well, the business doesn't own that telephone number? You need to get a separate line for the business in order to meet that requirement.
I would say no. I think in this day and age, the purpose of, and it's discussed, I think, in the sponsor statement, the purpose of it is so that if a consumer has problems, they will be able to reach the dealer. And in fact, in this modern age, I would actually hope that the dealer put the phone they answer most frequently, and in most cases, I suspect that's the cell phone.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you.
I don't see any other questions. So at that, we will hold the bill for further review, and we will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Friday, February 28th at 1 p.m. On Friday, we will have one topic of business, which will take up House Bill 146. If anyone is considering offering an amendment to House Bill 146, please let our office know and submit those amendments electronically by 5 p.m. on Thursday, February 27th. And with that, we will stand adjourned. The time is now 2:41 p.m.